Welcome to Growth Uncut, a podcast that interviews different people from around the world to share their views on personal growth. We feel passionately about connecting communities and raising awareness around social justice, humanity, and relationships. And today I'm really pleased to be joined by Julie Eden, who is a member of the Growth Alliance.
So, as you've said, I'm a member of the Growth Alliance, and I guess talk about the journey that kind of led me there. So on a professional level, my greatest identity as a professional, I guess, is as a probation officer, and I was in practice for 14 years in the south of England. And then that naturally progressed on to my current role, which is as a senior teaching fellow at the University of Portsmouth, within the team that primarily teaches people that are training to be probation officers.
Fantastic. And I guess looking at that as a career and from that experience, I imagine growth's kind of featured within that. So what
Yeah.
does personal growth kind of mean to you?
Well, I guess before I do that bit, I guess it's just to say that for me, personal growth is really important, and development is important. Being able to progress and move forward is important, which I guess in some ways answers your question a little bit. So I think personal growth is, there's a simple answer to that, which is about it's about development. And I guess believe that that should be an ongoing development, that we should always be able to look back and see that we are in a different spot to where we were previously. So I guess it's a journey of progression. So that for me, what growth is quite simple. And I'm somebody who is committed to that myself. The bit that I think is really difficult and challenging is about how growth is achieved. And I think my professional roles have been a real eye-opener in terms of that. So I think we have within our culture a kind of a bit of a myth that we live in this meritocratic society, that if you work really hard, you're going to achieve and you're going to do well in life. And probably a lot of doing well is about material growth and development. And I think my professional world has really been an eye-opener to me that it's not a level playing field, that there are massive social inequalities that affect people's abilities to be able to grow and development grow and develop. And I guess I've then been in roles professionally where I've been able to support people in that development and look at what's really important to be able to support people to achieve what they want to achieve in life.
And I guess knowing you, Julie, in terms of the work that you do, I know that you're really passionate about the kind of area of kind of trauma-informed practice and working with women. So looking at that through the context of growth, how challenging is it, would you say, in terms of supporting someone's personal growth when they have experienced, trauma or complex trauma, let's say? What's your view on that?
Again, I think it kind of, if you're working with people who have experienced trauma, I guess one first and foremost, you're working with people that don't feel safe, and like this is where my roles have been a real privilege for me, because most of us, I would say, don't really have to think about what that's like. And I guess working with people that is their experience on a day-to-day basis, and then thinking about how life would be for me if I didn't feel safe on an ongoing basis. Particularly in the home, the one place where we all like to retreat to when we're feeling a bit vulnerable. I guess the question then is, how can anyone be expected to grow and develop when they don't feel safe? And safety is one of those basic needs, isn't it? But then you can broaden that out and think about some of those other basic needs, like how can you work towards achieving your goals if you're hungry? How can you do that if you don't have a roof over your head? So I think some of the real eye-openers for me in terms of my professional career is that things that I've really taken for granted in my lifetime, particularly when I was younger, you know, having a stable environment and a support network, cheerleaders that will kind of support me to reach those goals, not having those things really then impacts on your ability to do well. So, you know, even if we haven't even talked about how finances might impact on that. But yeah, just without those things, it could be really hard. Well, it is really hard, isn't it, to then grow and develop and learn. And so, yeah, going back to that sort of myth around having a meritocratic society, we don't. And I guess the downside of that is if you're somebody who isn't achieving what society anticipates of you, that the view is that that's because you're somehow lazy. But I think there's a real challenge there in trying to reframe that narrative a little bit and think about, is it about that, or is it because this person fundamentally doesn't feel safe, or they haven't eaten for days, or they don't have a stable roof over their heads, or they don't have those significant others in their lives that are cheering them on. Those things are really fundamental, I think.
Yeah. And I think even when we create that space, you know, looking at my growth over my life, even like you say, feeling privileged to have had those spaces that are safe, that have enabled me to be brave, even then growth is uncomfortable, isn't it?
Definitely.
Feel vulnerable and you're doing something slightly
different. Definitely.
And I think
I guess in a professional capacity as well, even if you decide that you're the practitioner that's going to be a cheerleader, when you're then kind of making those connections with service users, for example in the capacity of a probation officer, that you're meeting a service user for the first time and you know you want to do some positive stuff, if they've never had that, again, it's really hard to sort of demonstrate that you don't want to be part of that machine, that you want to be something different for that person, and meeting that person on their level and where they're at and working alongside each other.
And I guess
finding a connection.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that links on really to the next question. And in some senses you've kind of touched on it already, really. But in terms of whether that's through your experiences or just where you're at right now, what would you say are the things that you kind of truly appreciate? What are the things that you kind of value in your life?
It definitely has to be the people that are around me. And again, I feel like I'm in a really fortunate position where I've, you know, a stable family growing up, which is, you know, as a kid and as a teenager, I probably took for granted very significantly. And then, you know, I got into the workplace as a probation officer and started hearing people's stories and realised that was a real privilege that I've had. To have that, but I think that really shapes who you are as a human being, doesn't it? Those experiences as a child of having that stability. So the immediate friends and family, really important, really valued. And then I guess as you get older and into the wide world and you get to choose people that you kind of include in those circles, you know, I've got some really important people I've got some really good female friends, one in particular that we egg each other on when we're struggling, and we're always there for each other. My own family, my partner, my babies, those are all things that I really value.
Yeah, and it goes back to that connection, doesn't it? That relationships, that's really important.
Yeah, and I think realizing that those things that I did as a young person really take for granted, and that actually that's given me a level of privilege. I think that's been a really important thing to, you know, there's all these things that I've taken for granted and all these things that at a point that I just thought were the norm, that everyone had that. And then you kind of get into the workplace, or I got into the workplace in probation and started hearing other people's experiences and realising that was a real privilege that I had those things. And I think it's important for me to hold on to that needs to be used in a positive way for me.
Yeah. And I guess moving on to the next question. So you've talked a little bit about the kind of people in your life that matter, but in terms of who inspires you, who would be a person that inspires you, and why would they inspire you, in what way would they inspire you?
My answer to that, I'm aware from the outset that's going to sound, it is going to sound very cheesy, but I've learnt so much, so much has shaped me as who I am as a as an adult person in the world, through being in the position, privileged position of a probation officer and hearing those stories from other people. I've learned so much from service users over the years about what strength is and about what you know, you hear people's stories and how they've overcome adversity. And it really has made me question, you know, would I, if I was dealt that hand, would I do anything different? So I think that's quite humbling. So I think, again, in our culture, in our society, when we think about people that offend, we like to other them, that they're somehow different from us. And that if you're, you know, a good person, that you couldn't imagine doing those things. But as I say, you hear the hands that people are dealt, and a lot of those things are beyond their control and out of their control, external to them. And then you start thinking, if that had happened to me, would I react any differently? Would I, what would I have done differently? And most of the time, I think you, well, I've come to the conclusion that I probably wouldn't. So that's quite a humbling experience, being confronted with that over many years, that actually the person sat opposite me is no different to who I am. We've just been dealt different circumstances. So that's one thing that's been really significant. And then I guess the other thing would be when you hear those paths that people have been down and the things that they've been thrown at them and the strength that they've got from within them then to, you know, because often people have had not, haven't had good family support, and they have, you know, thinking back to the women that you talked about that I was working with, you know, that every single relationship that they've had has been abusive in some way, right from being children, yet they've managed to find the strength within them to overcome that in some way. And again, it's that kind of putting yourself in those shoes and thinking, well, if I was in that position, what would I do? And realising that there's this whole network that you would draw on to be able to pick yourself up. And even then it would be hard. And yet there are these people that do it on their own, day in, day out. And that's quite something. I've been overwhelmed by that time and time and time again. And I guess the sad thing for me is that those experiences are never ones that we celebrate. Those voices are never heard. Those mountains that people climb aren't talked about. They're not, and yeah, we don't recognize and celebrate them, but most of us will never have to deal with that level of challenge and adversity.
And you know, Chad Maruna talks about that, doesn't he, in terms of how we celebrate punishment, you know, through that kind of spectacle of the courts, and yet when it comes to rehabilitation and growth, you know, I would say it isn't celebrated, and there are mechanisms in place that stunt that do not enable us to celebrate that, whether that's not newsworthy or whether that's not a popular story to tell. And I kind of think, you know, they're the very stories that are going to humanize and are going to narrow the gap and are going to make our communities feel safer, because like you say, that normality is really important, isn't it?
I think that's exactly what it's done for me, is that because probably I kind of went into the job because I was someone that in my younger years like loved a true crime story and documentary and whatever, and so I think there was probably an element that I wanted to go into criminal justice because it was a bit like craning your neck at a car crash, you know. And like you say, as you go, well, as I've gone through it, it's those stories just so powerful, and then you kind of go, you're no different to who I am. And I think what's important about that is that, and that's why I see that as a position of privilege, that most people will never hear those things. Most people will never have to put themselves in those shoes, and so it's quite easy, isn't it, to go along with the latest sensational headline.
Absolutely. And if it doesn't relate to people, if it doesn't matter to people, then you know, we lose those stories. They just remain unhit, you know, they remain hidden, don't they?
So we've got this whole like army of unsung heroes in our communities that have, you know, overcome massive hurdles.
And it's really weird, you know, like in terms of the work that I do with growth, I meet guys out when they come out of prisons, and it's really interesting that when you're walking around the community, no matter, you know, on maybe four or five occasions, someone's fallen over, or someone got their bike kind of trapped the other day in a railing, and the guy standing next to me is the first on the scene helping out. Do you know what I mean? Like saying, "Oh, don't worry about it. Let me help you. Let me help you." Like trying to lift stuff up or make things better, and you know, dropping around meals for neighbours that are struggling to cook for themselves because they're disabled during COVID. You know, all of these guys are, like you say, these knights that just kind of go around and help out, and yet that narrative, like you say, isn't there. And it's a really interesting point. But from, you know, the way in which you talk, it makes me reflect on where I've learned about resilience, and I would absolutely say that I've learned it on a prison wing, because you know, when you're doing let's say a 30-year sentence and you're still standing and you're trying desperately to grow, I kind of think, do you know what, I don't know if I could be where you are. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
all the stuff that people have gone through. So yeah, you're quite right.
And I think also then on a really selfish level, I guess then those days when I'm really struggling myself, I guess it's good for me to be able to kind of go, now hang on a minute, if that person dealt with that and came out the other side of it, I can do this. And I mean, so many times, particularly with the work that I did in women's centres, like so many times I just kind of walked away at the end of the day and thought, these women will never know how much they've impacted, like really positively, on who I am as a human being. And like, I've been, I think probation is kind of quite a very risk averse profession. And I think sometimes it's easy to not think of the person and the individual, but think about the offence and the risk. And I think for me, working in the women's centres really enabled me to see the women as women. And, you know, it's a group environment that people are in, and we kind of, you know, people could come in and out when they wanted to. And just having like really simple things like having tea and coffee on the side meant that people would come in. And as a practitioner, I would then see people offer to make each other tea and coffee. And you're able to then see people as humans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, women would come in and ask each other how they were. And like, we as staff were included in that. So, you know, often there were times when I reflected with one of my colleagues that I'd work with, that I'd be like, things have been really tough at work this week, and not one colleague has asked me how I am, but I've just come down to the women's centre and I've been asked by four or five service users how I am. Or not just asked, but people have picked up on that, are you okay, because you don't seem yourself today. And you kind of think, this again, it allows me to see you as a human being, not as a risk, not as your offence, but as a person. And so you're able to balance things out and say, well, yeah, you've done this harm, but actually I can also see your strengths. And I know that you've got nothing, you've got absolutely nothing, but you're still coming down here every week and you're giving your emotional labour to support other people. And again, that's a real position of privilege to be able to see that, which I don't. You know, even probation colleagues don't often have the opportunity to do that because they're working in a different environment. So yeah, those women in particular are really inspirational, have been and will always continue to be really inspirational for me.
Incredible, and such a good point, I think. And I guess moving on to in some senses it links, I guess, but in terms of your biggest challenge, you know, what would you say has been your biggest challenge, either personally or professionally, and what have you learnt from that?
I've been thinking quite a lot about this question, and I'll keep coming back to something that is not necessarily something that I want, you know, would have immediately wanted to have discussed, but I guess it's my experiences as an adult of kind of realising the extent to which gender inequality exists within our community. And that's affected me personally and professionally. So personally, kind of being put in positions where I felt that I've had to choose between my career and my family life, and both identities are really important to me. And my view is that they should be able to exist harmoniously with each other, and it shouldn't ever have to be a choice of choosing one over the other. And I think the fact that I have been in that position has made me realize that that's about gender inequality. And then in terms of the work that I've been doing with female service users, and that realizing the extent to which women in the criminal justice system are failed by society, and that there are all kind of gendered issues that underpin that. So the good thing about that, I guess, is that it gives me fire in my belly to try and be a champion and to try and amplify those voices and to try and support change for the better for those people. So then surrounding myself with other like-minded people that want to support that change too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's just difficult because I think, again, I think there's a bit of a myth that there is gender equality. So trying to challenge that a little bit is quite difficult. I guess challenging any kind of status quo is difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the whole part of the alliance was that we would connect up, wasn't it? That we would
Yes,
together look
definitely.
at. It was about raising awareness of those issues that are underneath sometimes the practices that kind of operate, whether that's around gender or race or, just difference maybe. Be leaders in that field in terms of speaking openly and passionately about it. And hopefully through those stories, people learn, don't they? That was the plan, is that we wanted to connect things up. But it's interesting you talk about fire in your belly, because I, as you know, a guy who works for me, he's currently residing in prison, and he always says, when I have my kind of rants and get really stressed out about the system, he always says, find this energy. He says, it's negative at the minute, but it's your energy, and you need to convert it into something that is positive. Don't lose the energy, but just take the negative out of it and use it to fuel your passion, really. And I kind of think, again, it's just another example of we could see that as a service user, we could see him as a service user, but ultimately he is absolutely a member of, the family in terms of the growth family, or in terms of the work that we do. He is instrumental to that. But yeah, fire in your belly is certainly what kind of helps us move forward, isn't it, in terms of maintain our hope. And we hope to kind of carry that forward to other people, really, that have lost that hope, because I think the system
Definitely. I think some
is
of that
very
is about
vulnerable.
being able. I mean, you've just used that example of your working relationship with somebody who could be viewed as like a service user, offender, whatever. But I think the reason that it's not is because you've focused on connecting together as human beings. And I think somewhere along the line, this sort of narrative has developed that you can't be professional and be human, or that somehow if you're having a human response that that's unprofessional. And so I think that's made practitioners fearful of connecting with the people that they're working with on that level. It was funny because I was thinking about it earlier, and an experience that I've had very recently of I've just had a lockdown baby, and went to a appointment with a midwife where she had to tell me that in all likelihood I would have to give birth alone, which was really difficult to hear. And I had a very emotional response to that, and she responded very emotionally to it as well. And I knew that there was nothing that either of us could do to change it, and I didn't want her to fix it. I knew she couldn't fix it. But her emotional response made me feel supported, and I knew I wasn't on my own, and she was alongside me. And it really made me think about that in terms of, I'm talking loads about my role as probation officer because I think that's what's most important to me in the role that I'm in now. I still feel that I'm kind of connected with that and supporting the development and the growth of those people that are on that journey of becoming probation officers. But yeah, it really made me think about that in terms of probation practice and that significance and importance of empathy and how that's displayed. And that can be in a very raw, emotional way, because that's what we do as human beings.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think I've, it's really interesting having I worked for probation and obviously worked alongside you, very, very lucky to do so, and worked at ICJS as well. And I kind of think when I set up on my own, I kind of thought I've got my own set of guidance, you know, and I am quite happy to display emotion in a much more kind of active way, because as you know, I am a proper hugger, and wear my heart on my sleeve, really. And I kind of think just that it is freeing. It is freeing. And I think sometimes that may look like I maybe don't have those professional boundaries, but I think there's something very different, isn't there? There's something very different there about how we express ourselves and maintain a boundary, but how we show our authentic self. And
yeah,
the stuff that's really important for me.
Yeah, and I guess in that experience that I've just talked about, like, I didn't feel that the midwife was unprofessional. You say, I felt that she was having an authentic response to the situation. And then I kind of compare that to the culture that was within probation when I first joined. Things have moved on now, but that were very, I remember in my first like week of orientation having whole training discussions around why we shouldn't hug offenders, which was the term that we would use at the time. And there were some really strong views from our mentors, I guess, about why we shouldn't do that and how that was unprofessional and whatever.
Yeah.
But like you say, sometimes, and you know, there are points, of course, where that kind of response is unprofessional, but there are other points where it's also authentic, an authentic human response, to that individual and also to the situation. And I don't think that we should be labelling that necessarily as unprofessional.
Yeah. I always remember when I first went to Norway, went to Bastoy prison, there was a social worker there and she wanted to take a photograph of her hugging a prisoner, because she felt that contributed to personal growth. And I remember kind of, exploring that with her, and she said, you know, it is symbolic that you care. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? That sometimes I think we're so fearful. And also that idea of caring brings with it, obviously, attachment, doesn't it? And connection that investment, which is absolutely great, but can also be heartbreaking, can't it? If that connection then breaks down or things are challenging. But just as a really simple, just saw it so simply, and I kind of thought, wow. I remember speaking to so many people about not hugging people whilst at work or not hugging service users, and made it really straightforward. And I kind of thought,
yeah,
okay, that makes complete sense to me. It's going to lead me on to my last question. So, I wonder whether we've talked so much about so many great things, but I think. As a last
we
question.
Could go on all day, couldn't we?
We could, couldn't we? I'm like, oh my God, has this been hours?
And then the world will be hours.
In terms of just one thing that you feel to make our kind of communities healthier, to make them safer places, one thing that you think we need to improve and grow our communities, what would it be?
I think I've probably in a roundabout way said it all the way through, but I think the most important thing is about empathy, is about, you know, when you, I'm on quite a lot of Facebook forums, community forums, and you read the kind of things that people post and then the responses to them. And there's a lot of negativity. There's not a lot of people kind of wanting to put themselves in another person's shoes and really thinking about what that would feel like. And I think it's those, in terms of my professional career, it's those times where I've sat and done that, that have really contributed to my personal growth as a practitioner and as a human being. Just thinking of a story. Well, it's not a story. It's an experience that somebody that I was working with was telling me. So she was just talking to me about her experience of domestic abuse, and she told me this one scenario of. Where her husband, her partner, was being abusive towards her, and she was saying how she was breastfeeding her baby at the time, and he punched her in the face while she was feeding her baby, and she just said, because I was feeding my baby, I just had to carry on. And she was like, and I was aware that, so she was like, I couldn't cry, I couldn't flinch. I couldn't deal with what has happened to me because my baby was feeding, and she was like, and then I became aware that blood from my nose was dripping down onto my baby's head. And it's just those kind of things that I just think, it, like in that moment, I was just like, what would you do in that situation? How, like, and then how, what impact does that have on you? And again, that's where that sort of admiration for strength comes into it, because just sort of think, I don't know if I'd be able to do that. So I think empathy is really important. So kind of, is that, well, I don't even know where that quote's come from about condemning a little less and caring a little more. Isn't there a quote around that? I think that contributes massively to a sort of safer environment. And if we're doing those things, then we would naturally then also be amplifying those voices that are unheard in our communities. So if we're able to empathize a little bit more, able to put ourselves in other people's shoes a little bit more, I think greater understanding about the journeys that other people have been on, and perhaps why then they've made the choices that they have done. And then I guess leading on from that, if we're able collectively to be a bit more empathic, then maybe when people behave in a way that we find difficult and abhorrent, rather than, I feel like as a community and as a society, our response is that we attribute blame solely to that individual. Maybe if we're able to be a bit more empathic, we can learn to take collective responsibility for that action. Because if we're then realizing, we're looking at the extent of social inequalities, and we're noticing the differences between, you know, what I've had and what that person's had, not in terms of like wealth necessarily or financial wealth, but, you know, in terms of nurturing relationships and a safe environment, if we're able to acknowledge that other people don't have that, maybe we can start taking some collective responsibility around that. Because they are things fundamentally that we should all have. We should fundamentally all be able to live in a safe environment. But that's not, that shouldn't be a privilege. But for so many people, that's not the case.
And just being open to that conversation, isn't it? Like sometimes it's just being receptive to say, do you know what, I'm open to understand what's gone on before I've kind of, I kind of throw that judgment in. And everyone has a part to play in that, absolutely. So
Because thinking about that woman that I've just spoken to you about, well, if that's what you're dealing with in a day-on-day-in basis, is it any wonder that the way that you learnt to cope with that, because you felt so alone and isolated, was that you started misusing alcohol? Well, no, it's you know, it's not a surprise to me. So then, you know, is it any wonder that you've then, you know, been caught up with alcohol related offending in some way, shape or form? No, it's not. You know, it's not a huge surprise if I look at it in that way.
Thank you so much, Julie. It was just brilliant. I found myself getting emotional throughout it, really, just which is you know, I think it's there's so much stuff there that I really resonate with and I really value. And we're so lucky to have you on the Growth Alliance. I think you're just you're a marvellous person. Yeah, it's been really, really great to talk to you. And thank you for sharing your views so openly and honestly.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Growth Uncut. If you'd like to find out a little bit more information about work that we do, please visit www.penalreformsolutions.com or follow us on Twitter on Penal Reform Solutions, or even support us on Patreon through the link www.patreon.com/growthmovement. Thanks for listening, and catch you next time.